Thank you. So a couple caveats before I start. One is that this talk was given last week with three presenters because we each told a different part of the story. And the other caveat is if you're expecting a different talk, this talk was swapped in very late when the other speaker canceled. So make sure you're in the right seats here. I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story about the last year. And, you know, as soon as my mouse clicker starts working here, we'll move right along. Don't you just hate it when that happens? Sorry about that. All right, there we go. So I'm going to tell you a story about passing leadership of a open source project from one person to another. And this isn't just story time. Hopefully some of this will be explaining why this matters to you, even if you're not in the same situation. And I kind of fell into this accidentally by doing this and realizing that it's not common practice, perhaps. I haven't heard other people talking about doing this quite intentionally. So let's start. So a year ago, I was community manager for an open source project called RDO, and I'm not going to tell you a lot about it because it's not really pertinent, but it is a sub-project of OpenStack. We provide packages for CentOS. And it's part of the OpenStack community. It's a community that's also supported by Red Hat. And I was the community manager there for about 4 years. Being involved in any open source community, you start to learn they're kind of like families. They have weird personalities and strange traditions, and that one crazy guy that comes to your Thanksgiving dinner and gets drunk, and you know, all of these things that you learn about a community over time that aren't really in the documentation per se. RDO itself as a community has a number of relationships with other communities, organizations, projects. RDO is packaged on CentOS, on the CentOS community build system, so there's a strong link between the communities there. The CI is run there in that infrastructure. It is financially supported by Red Hat, so there's the political alliances that you have to make with the various organizations within Red Hat. It is, as I mentioned, part of the OpenStack community. There's also a downstream product called Red Hat OpenStack Store, OpenStack Platform, and so I had relationships with that engineering group. You also end up with a lot of personal relationships. At the top, you know, it's kind of different communities that are represented in this graphic here. There's the engineering team within Red Hat. There's the actual development community. There are users of the software. There are the people from the OpenStack Foundation itself. And then over at the bottom right there, you see some of my crazy coworkers. So I have the relationships within the company of people that I work with on a day-to-day basis. So a lot of the job of being a community manager is personal relationships. And then there's the different parts of the job, and the things that I do within the job vary from doing what I'm doing right at this second to doing things on social media or creating swag or, lots of travel represented there. So there's a lot of different aspects of a community. There's also these strange traditions. One of the things that we do within the RDO community is we have ducks at all of our conferences. So if you ever go to an OpenStack conference and you see ducks, you'll know that that is a tradition that started while I was community manager with this project. And every one of the open source projects that you are involved with have that weird tradition that you would be pressed to explain to anybody outside the community in any reasonable way. But, of course, these traditions have to be maintained, otherwise you'll irritate somebody. So communities, like families, are complicated. And when it came time for me to move on from that position to another position, I'm now the CentOS community manager. And it wasn't just a question of saying, all right, Rain, this is your job now, and I'll see you at the next conference. There was a lot of intentional handover that had to happen between those two positions. So why do you care? I presume that most of you are not in the situation that I'm describing. Probably most of you are not in a situation where you're planning to leave your current job. Maybe you're happy where you are. Perhaps you are. These things don't seem to apply to you. But there are a lot of reasons to create some kind of a transition plan, to carefully document what you do. And these are not necessarily all related directly to a job transition. Perhaps someday you'll want to take an extended vacation. Maybe you want to delegate part of your tasks. So here, one of the reasons that was very valuable to me was that as I was documenting my job, I discovered that very few people, even within my own organization, had any idea what I did. There's a real perception that community managers, events people, marketers in general, spend their life traveling around the world drinking beer with their coworkers. And of course, as you can see here, it's my coworker Brian and I in a pub in Dublin a year ago. That's only part of it. When I got done documenting what my job was for this particular project, I had probably a half dozen people come to me after various meetings and say, I had no idea what it was that you actually did. I thought that you went around drinking beer and giving stickers to people and there wasn't anything more to it. And one hopes that there's more to it than that. The other side of this, ironically, is that for most of us, you don't have any idea what you do either. You get to the end of the day, you know you were busy, you can't remember what you did, you're not sure that what you did was actually purposeful. I found that the process of writing a transition document for my replacement had the effect of really focusing me and identifying the things that I did for my own benefit, sure, and that gave me more confidence that I'm not wasting my time, but also helped me identify the things that were a complete waste of time. I attend a lot of events, and by going through this process, we were able to identify some of those events that were a waste of time and budget, because they weren't on mission. They weren't focused on our actual goals. And that was true of many things that we identified along the way. You're wasting your time on this. You need to focus on something else. Another one of the benefits of having things clearly documented is that it makes it easy to hand a particular task over to someone else that doesn't already have deep knowledge of the system. You can break things into, you can think modularly, you might say. You can break things into small tasks that you can hand off. Now, when we started this transition process, my replacement was identified, and right at the time when I was supposed to do the handover, she went on medical leave. And it ended up being an extended medical leave. And during that time, I was able to take some of these tasks and hand them off to a contractor who was able to just pick up my documentation and run with it so that I could do my new job without also having to do my old job. Another side effect of writing these documents is that you begin to identify that there are certain things that only you can do. And that's not necessarily a good thing. Particularly in organizations like my own, which are based entirely on open source, I work for Red Hat, and when you're working in a community-facing project, you want to be able to encourage volunteers to come from the community and pick up aspects of the job. Having things that only I can do means that those people cannot participate in those things. It also means that if I get another job or get hit by a truck, those things are not clearly documented for someone else to pick up. So having a transition plan makes these sorts of things possible. They remove a lot of stress from you. They let you know that what you're doing is actually valuable. And they let your team know that what you're doing is valuable. So let's talk a little bit about what you should be documenting. Some of these things are obvious, and some of them are things that you might not think of until you get into the middle of it. And what we found was that as we were in the midst of the transition, the person that I was handing over to would frequently come back to me with holes in the document. And so my rough notes of a couple paragraphs ended up being a 30-page document that was being passed around to various people. So here's some of the things that I believe that you should cover in your transition document. I'm not going to cover each one of these in detail, but I'm going to focus on a few things that are absolutely critical. So the first thing that you want to give your replacement or anyone that's interested in picking up some of your responsibilities is a reading list. What do they need to know before they even step on board? Do you have documentation that you think that they should read? You encourage them to read the entire documentation, which can be kind of daunting sometimes. Are there important historical email threads that you can point them to in the mailing list archive that really set the tone for your community? Either because they identify certain important characters or because they show the reasoning for certain important or controversial decisions that have shaped your community. Those sorts of things are things that they would never stumble upon on their own if you don't point them out. The next thing that you want to identify are what I call the dramatis personae, the important characters in your community. So if you've done anything in theater, you've seen this term. It means the cast of characters. And you want to identify the people that are the senior statespeople in your community, the opinion formers in your community, the loud voices, the poisonous people, the people that are undermining things, the people that are always complaining and causing problems. Who are the people that are important political connections within the other organizations involved in your effort? Who's the quiet person that you'll never hear from directly but's doing a lot of work behind the scenes? Identifying these people and introducing them is almost the most important part of any job that requires a lot of community involvement, a lot of personal interaction. Now, I gotta tell you a story about this. When I wrote this document, I wrote out in detail my cast of characters within my community, and this was intended to be a document between myself and the person that was replacing me. And so I discussed the difficult characters in the community. The document ended up being distributed rather more broadly than I intended, ended up being shared with one of the people that I had mentioned as one of the difficult characters in the community. So all of that to say, you might want to do this part confidentially, keep it out of the main document. That ended really well for me. We had a good talk with the guy, and things are better now than they were before, but it could have gone very badly. You can really destroy your own reputation that way. So be careful how you handle this part of things. The next thing that you want to do is document your daily, weekly, and monthly tasks. Now, being a creature of shell scripts, I actually have a to-do list that is in a cron tab that gets repopulated every day and every week and every month. And I saw this was something, this part was easy for me. If I don't have a to-do list, things don't get done. And so this was something that I could very easily pass on. But there are things that you do every day and possibly every week that you simply don't think about and other people don't think about. Maybe you check your ticket queue twice a day. Maybe you check a particular hashtag on Twitter once a day and amplify the message. That's something that's part of my daily responsibility that I don't really think about. You know, I do it even before I go to my office in the morning. Document these things. Document what meetings you go to, which ones are important, which ones can be missed. Introduce your replacement to the chair of that meeting. Make sure that they're on the invite list. Attend that meeting with them the first two or three times so that you can have a back channel with them saying, now this person is, they're important, their opinion really matters, and this person just likes to talk a lot. Also, when a question is addressed to you, make sure you very vocally redirect it to your replacement and say, no, I'm not handling that anymore. Mary Thingvall, who you haven't met, is now my replacement, and she'll be handling those questions from here on out. And that shows your confidence in the person. It makes sure that they're well introduced around the team. Important annual events. These are what gets dropped most frequently in a transition. I attend FOSDEM once a year, and it takes me 3 months of my life to plan that, and then I don't think about it until the next time. And so if I had not mentioned that explicitly to my replacement, that is something that would have gotten dropped. And the same is true of any annual event, whether it's your budget review or a particular conference or your stakeholder review, any of these things that could get dropped because you don't think about them on a daily basis. This part was fun. This is the part where you remember that the most important accounts around your project are tied to your personal email address and are on your personal credit card, and all of these things have to get transferred to the new person in charge. This was a great opportunity to transition a lot of these credentials from a personal account to a role account, say Twitter at rdocommunity.org rather than rbowen@redhat.com. And that makes it easier for these credentials to be shared with a hopefully very small but more distributed team. It makes it easier to effect those transfers in the future. It also was the opportunity for our team at work to transfer to like a LastPass account for our various shared credentials so that we didn't have to actually give each person the account information on their personal email address. What else? There's also the concept of inventory. If you have a big box of T-shirts in your garage, like I do, you hand them off to or bring them to an event like this and give them out, which is what we're doing in the Fedora booth right now, by the way. This part was also fun. There is a list that grows and grows and grows in any job of the things that you'd really like to do someday but don't have time. And then there's also the list of the tasks that you've started but haven't quite finished, and oh, I haven't finished this one because it depends on this JIRA ticket, that depends on this bug in the upstream open source project, that depends on this person who's on vacation. And documenting all of that is really critical for the person that's taking over, who only sees this incomplete task and doesn't know what's involved in pursuing it. It was also an opportunity for my replacement to look at the wish list and say, well, we're never doing that, so let's just take it off the list and remove the stress. And this one is no longer relevant because the world has moved on from there. So this was also a way for the overall to-do list to kind of get culled, and then I could move on with a clear conscience that I hadn't dropped the ball on those things. What else do we have? I already mentioned inventory. I now no longer have any boxes of OpenStack swag in my garage. And I do still have a NUC server system in my house that technically belongs to Rain that I need to pass on to her. But other than that, I think I'm clear. But in one of the other hats that I wear, I work with the Apache Software Foundation, and we have swag for conferences in no less than 6 places around the world. And we're currently in this process of documenting what is where and trying to consolidate that a little bit so that more people can be involved in our promotion efforts without having to guess where everything is. Another item is your budget. If you are in a job that has a budget, there are certain tricks that you learn along the way about how things work, how you transfer items of budget from one thing to another. In my case, when I was running the community side of an open source project, sometimes I have to pay for people to attend events, and that's always a bit of juggling within the Red Hat expense system to get that paid for. So there are all of these things that you need to, these tips that you need to document and pass on. Maybe there's some that are circumventing the system that you want to pass on but not document. You know, it depends on how strict your expense system is. And I did actually mention meetings before. It was important in my case because I was transitioning to somebody that was 6 time zones over to communicate clearly which of the events were worth getting up at 6 in the morning for and which ones were not, which of the meetings would be really critical to her getting her job done and which ones she could safely skip. At least initially, until, you know, later in the product cycle or whatever. These are all things which were important to communicate. So then I had this document. I had this 25, 30-page document that I handed over to Rain, and then I'm done, right? Well, no, it's not quite that simple, because even in the process of writing this document, things changed. Some of the important cast of characters moved on to other positions, and we needed to update those to the new reality. And she has taken the task of maintaining this document ongoing. Because of all the reasons that I've enumerated before, this isn't just about the transition between 2 different leaders. It's also about the ongoing documentation of how your community works, how your job works, if it's not doesn't look like my job. These are all things. The other thing that happened was, as she was working through this document, it became clear that there were things that I simply assumed that everybody knew. And that wasn't the case. There are things about how you get a patch into an open source project that vary greatly from one project to another, which is something I discovered when I first got my first OpenStack patch in. There was just all of this knowledge that was assumed and not clearly documented that you just had to pick up and ask people, and now it's well documented. There were also, because I have a gray beard, many of these scripts that were written in to do some of the back-end tasks were written in Perl. And Rain had no experience in Perl, and I had assumed some things about installing modules and so on that were not part of her knowledge set. And these are things that were identified in this editorial process as being confusing. This is a living document and continues to be updated as you move along. One of the things that came out of this process was identifying what's really important, what's urgent, what do we need to get done immediately, what can we simply drop because it does not serve the purpose of our project, it doesn't serve the core goals of our project, or what things can we put aside for 6 months while Rain is getting up to speed in her new position. Often the person that's been doing this has been doing it for 4 or 5 years, as I had, and it takes a while for somebody to get up to speed, both on the knowledge of the technical tasks involved and knowing who in the community they need to talk to and establishing those relationships. Now, if you're the person that is assuming the role, if you're the person that's stepping into the role, there's two pieces of advice that I would offer you. The first is, don't be afraid to make changes. Don't be afraid to make this job your own thing, to establish your own voice in this new position. Sometimes when you're stepping into the shoes of somebody that's been doing it for years and years, there's a tendency to do things exactly the way that they did it because you don't want to rock the boat. But you have this moment when you step into a new job where you can play ignorance and use that to your advantage to kind of get around some of that introductory awkwardness and try new things and then say, oh, I didn't know that was a problem. And, you know, I'm still doing that in the CentOS community 6 months in. Don't tell them I said that. The other thing that I would say is kind of the opposite of that. Make sure that you are listening to those old traditions and you listen carefully to what's important. Listen carefully to what you cannot change, what is important tradition. You don't take away the ducks in the RDO community because that's what we've always done, but commit to listening to the new project as you roll out new traditions or even end of life some of the old ones. Make sure you get feedback from the community on that. So, I have buzzed through that very quickly. Does anyone have any of your own stories or have any questions? Yes, and please do step to the mic if you have something to say.
Hi. I'm curious how you feel that this methodology, which is well laid out, thank you very much, applies to a more technological role. Like if you're a project leader, as I am, for a software project, and you want to transfer leadership or architecture role to a new person, do you have any ideas of maybe some areas where there may be some things that aren't as important or some other things we should consider?
Well, I think that this process works for almost any job, but the emphasis will be greater or lesser on different aspects of it. Like maybe if a job doesn't involve as much interpersonal or political interactions, that component would be less important. In the case of project management, something that I didn't touch on would be your product cycle, your project cycle, and which drives which, whether the timeline drives the project or the other way around, those sorts of things that are not obvious when you step into a new project. But I feel like this process can be adapted to almost any position, I think.
I agree. Thank you.
All right, thank you.